But the guy who plays Magic is amazing.
He's so
visually. Really, he's so charismatic. Like, yeah.
Yes. And he's like way better at basketball than I would have thought for an actor who isn't actually an NBA player. They don't have to do like all those cuts that you do when the guy's like terrible at sports. Oh, hello. Hello. Welcome to Debatable. It's a fake television show where we debate nothing. That is Bill Barnwell down below. Hello, Bill.
Hello, Pablo.
And this is our old friend, Mina Kimes.
Hi.
Hello, Mina.
Hello.
And he has been on that show so far. But I'm hoping he gets better as the season goes on.
Yeah, the 360 dunk they had him throw down was a little bit unrealistic, but the CGI was good.
He's going to save the dunk contest. Next year, it's going to be Ja Morant and John C. Reilly, one versus one in the dunk contest.
Speaking of basketball, can we just briefly address the fact that yesterday was Selection Sunday, and the NFL just bust in like the Kool-Aid man and stomped all over these poor children with their news, their relentless news?
So many living room cutaways.
Just so many people just on their phones, like on, you know, on the chairs in the gym, just watching the Tom Brady news. I felt awful. I mean, it felt, we're going to get to it. Let's just get to it, actually.
You felt
awful. Are we
going
to get to select? I did
2 1-hour specials on Tom Brady's retirement. The real victim is me, not the kids, me.
Well, let's make a third, Alabaster. Where are we starting today's 1 hour special on Tom Brady?
Yeah, where are we starting? And the question, broadly, and I think I know the answer, Mina. What was your reaction to the news that Tom Brady unretired?
My first reaction.
I just want to know where you guys reacted. Like, where did you hear the news? What were you doing, like, when you got this alert?
Bill?
I think I've already forgotten, which should tell you how sort of like non-spectacular or non-exciting was. I think maybe waiting for my fiance to come out of Target. Like, I think I might have been in the Target parking lot, somewhere in that range. Maybe at an Old Navy. I don't know.
I was at home, I think, just relaxing. I don't know. And my first reaction was our NFL Live group chat lit up with, oh, no, like I just did, everyone complaining about having to do the retirement special all over again. Some proposals that we just run it back and just play the tape because it will probably be the same in a year. A little disappointment because I had coined the term NFC Gone South, and I don't think that applies anymore, and I felt pretty good about that nickname for the division. But I do think that nickname, the status of the division, is a big part of why Brady's back. I mean, Bill, don't you agree that Tom Brady probably looked at the NFC South, looked at the state of play, and realized he could come in and just roll to a division title?
I'm surprised he didn't wait until like week 9, because I think he only needs half a season to win the NFC South. I feel so bad. Another person I feel bad for, a team I feel bad for, the Falcons, who were like,
oh my God,
kind of wondering whether they should go for it. They signed Jake Matthews to an extension. Like, okay, we're not trading Matt Ryan. We can win the division Matt Ryan at quarterback.
I love the idea that the Falcons just had Calvin Ridley get suspended for a whole year because of the gambling thing. And then the next week, Tom Brady decides to come back because he, like Bill Barnwell at Old Navy and Target, is finding some great discounts in the division. Yes.
And like Old Navy and Target, the Bucks now are in this weird situation where maybe their guys weren't going to come back. Maybe the gang wasn't going to come back together. And yet, at the last possible second, not even before the free agent tampering window began, but as the free agent tampering window began, Tom Brady was like, actually, I'm good. I'm going to come back. And I can imagine there were players who were going to go elsewhere who decided, I'd rather give it another shot with Tom Brady if I could.
Yeah, this have a Ocean's 11 type feel. Mm-hmm. I guess Tom Brady plays the role of Brad Pitt. Although that was a little bit more premeditated, but the one last job factor definitely is influencing free agents. And the Bucks, as Bill and I have discussed a lot, have so many free agents. It's crazy. And
26, right? 26 free agents, supposedly.
It's remarkable because at the Combine just a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about the Bucks and envisioning a future without Tom Brady. And the consensus, at least on our show, was that this team should rebuild. Right? Like they don't have a quarterback. There's no reason to compete right now. There aren't quarterbacks out there. And I think this Brady's decision is such an interesting case study in how having a quarterback impacts timeline and roster construction. Because without Brady, I believe you probably do want to let a lot of these guys go and start looking to the future. With Brady, you go into all of the cap gymnastics, all of the voidable years, all of the discount. You do everything possible to win now.
Yeah, their cap guy has not slept in 24 hours, realistically.
But it also feels like Tom Brady clearly hasn't been enjoying how he has been spending his nights at home, right? Like this notion. I mean, look, Tom Brady, what was my reaction to this? I was at dinner, I turned my phone off. I found out about it after the fact, like 2 hours later. I was very late. Was kind of shocked that we didn't get like an NFT or a hype video. It was just like, nah, here I am. Like never said the word retired officially. So, hey, guess what? I'm not retired. And all of it felt like Tom Brady became a cliche. And I say that because this is what you do, right? This is the an athlete dies twice. This is every boxer we've ever seen not feeling good about what they are when they're not getting, and I use this word deliberately, they're not getting the high of competition. You know, I don't know if it was the Ronaldo video that Brady had, you know, that we saw from him at Old Trafford after the game, after the match with his son getting the photo, and Ronaldo asks him, are you done? And he's like, I don't know if like, that was the turning point, but the idea that Tom Brady is wired to only enjoy this thing, it seems like, yes, he is becoming exactly the caricature of Tom Brady that I'd always imagined.
Pablo, you mentioned, you asked us where we were when this happened. I want to ask you guys, where do you think Gronk was when he found out he was going to have to play again in 2022?
I don't know why, but my first reaction is McDonald's playpen. Just in the ball pit.
Oh, yeah. Smash cut. The ball pit. Smash. Yes, Gronk peaks above a ball
pit.
Yes,
I'm back too. I do want to address, Pablo, what you said about Brady, like, and maybe not enjoying the post-retirement life, or at least feeling unfulfilled by it. I think there's something to that. And when he tweeted that he had unfinished business, you know, some people, I don't know, mocked the concept. We're talking about the most accomplished quarterback in NFL history. What possible unfinished business could he have? He doesn't need to stat pad his lead, right? He's going to always be the greatest. To me, though, I think there is some unfinished business in regards to his ability to play the position. I mean, the reason I was surprised by his retirement in the first place is he was coming off of a season in which he was a credible MVP candidate. He was coming off a single game performance in their loss to the Rams, where he almost led an incredible comeback. One of the last passes he threw over Jalen Ramsey, who was like, hey, he's no longer going to be a touchdown over me, was a beautiful go ball to Mike Evans, right? Yep, and so to me, like, his unfinished business is not maybe like adding another ring. It's the fact that he can still play at such a high level. And it was in some ways kind of a weird time for him to walk away because of it.
Well, that's Bill. I mean, the notion of like, okay, when an athlete comes back from retirement, typically, again, to use the boxer template, it's pathetic. This is not going to look pathetic this season, right? I mean, for all of the problems that you guys have outlined with roster construction and the cap, Tom Brady and what he does, like, that can age as slowly as he wants, it seems.
Well, we know with quarterbacks, as good as they are, they typically tend to be really good, and then they fall off a cliff. And I think with Tom Brady, I think there's that balance, that question of, you know, he retired without falling off that cliff. And this is someone who's very, you know, prideful, someone who has accomplished so much, who's always looked good pretty much from the start of his NFL career, never had to go through that stretch where he was struggling and looked like Brett Favre at the end of his career or Peyton Manning at the end of his career. But this is also a guy who said, I want to play until I'm 45 years old. So could this be a situation where Tom Brady is maybe a little concerned that he's going to have that year? I think that's at least fair to wonder about. And I think he's probably going to play at a high level, but the chances of him falling off that cliff increase each year. Maybe it's 5%, maybe it's 10%, maybe it's 20%. We don't know.
He's doing it. But, he's doing it. Alabaster, but, he's doing it.
He's but, calling it. He's calling it.
Bill calling is soft it. Launching the take. He is soft launching the take right now. It's but, over. The cliff is coming.
The cliff is not coming. Tom Brady's going to be fine. I'm more concerned about the defense than I am about the Bucs offense. Because the Bucs, I think all those offensive players are going to come back. They've already got Chris Godwin back. You got to figure Gronk's going to come back. Ryan Jensen signed a 3-year deal. They're going to be fine on offense, but the defense, Mina, suddenly major holes if they can't bring back a bunch of those guys in free agency.
Yeah, the most prominent being Carlton Davis, who should be a very desired free agent cornerback, should command a large contract, should probably not take a discount to play with Tom Brady, unlike, I don't know, Gronk, you know, he should get paid what he's worth. I also think, though, there is a connection between the will Tom Brady fall off a cliff at some point question and the Bucs roster construction question, because since coming to Tampa, Tom Brady's played behind one of the best offensive lines in football. And while they did bring back Ryan Jensen on one of those, you know, funny deals I talked about with unavoidable years to try to make it fit. And they do have the tackle position set. There is a question mark at guard now. Alex Kappa, who Bill and I were talking about before the show, just left. Aaron Stinney, they signed to a deal. I wouldn't be surprised if that's a position they attack in the They try to fill in the draft just because if there's one thing you can do to hedge against or at least protect Tom Brady from falling off a cliff, it's to protect him. And I think that's something that Tampa will probably do, Bill, at the expense of the defense because it's more important to them.
I agree. And let me ask you guys, let's get the juicy question out there because we have to ask this question, right? This is a debate show. Do we think Tom Brady wanted to leave? Do we think he wanted to go somewhere else and he just went back
to the
last possible sec? I don't want to name teams out there, but there's been some smoke. That smoke is not fire, but is that a possibility that Tom Brady wanted to go somewhere else and Bruce Arians basically shut that down and Tom Brady chose going back to Tampa as opposed to going somewhere else?
So we should clarify the context and the circumstances, right? Because, yes, I'm fascinated, by the way, where is Tom Brady's Obama translator, his sports radio surrogate, Tom Brady Sr. in all of this? I want to know what he has to say about how we got here, because he tends to give the tea when Tom Brady doesn't actually want to give it to us. But the Niners seem to be the thing that, if you were a conspiracist, right, that was your clubhouse leader. The red yarn was pointing at San Francisco. He's from like a half hour out in San Mateo. This is the team that he wanted to be with the whole time. It's where he wanted to go numerous times, but he didn't. And it's because, correct me if I'm wrong, the Bucs just held the rights to him. And so he was trapped. And Bruce Arians famously at the combine, Jason Light at the combine, the GM said, "We're not giving this dude up. Like, that's bad for business." And so you're asking, like, did he push back on that? Which is fascinating.
Being trapped in Tampa, I think, was the plot of Spring Breakers. I don't know if you guys remember that movie. Tom Brady Sr., by the way, much
that's where
like
Antonio
Odell
Brown
Beckham
was, by the way, starring in a version of Spring Breakers with Riff Raff while this phone alert came across.
Tom Brady Sr., Odell Beckham Sr., handshake, justified. Because I don't know if you guys remember, but Tom Brady Sr. was the one who originally denied the retirement. Not justified, by the way, because Tom Brady did retire and he changed his mind. But anyways, the you know, the arc of this is long and it points to the seniors being right. I think that, I think it's entirely possible that Brady was interested in San Francisco. There was so much smoke around there. I also think, to this quote from Arians, that Tampa was not interested in trading him to San Francisco. But I return to the thing I said at the top of the show, which is, even if Brady was interested in San Francisco, you take the NFC South over the NFC West 10 times out of 10, man. Like, I get it. And maybe that wasn't his priority. Maybe he wanted to be home and play with Kyle Shanahan. I don't know. But if I was a free agent quarterback looking at these divisions, I would choose the NFC South.
Well, that's all true. But the chance to succeed where Jimmy Garoppolo failed.
That's
the one exciting thing for Tom Brady here.
Did not even consider that. That is why Bill Barnwell is the master conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, Jimmy Garoppolo, smash cut to him with like a jade roller working on his cheekbones, suddenly realizes that Tom Brady's back. Alabaster, where did you hear about this, incidentally?
I actually got a text from Mina Kynes that just said, "Welp, period." And I knew that something happened on Twitter to add to the doc.
Well played.
So the question I have for you guys is, on ESPN Daily, Pablo had David Epstein, author of Range, on to talk about aging athletes. And David Epstein at one point postulated that Brady might not actually fall off a cliff for many years, that his skill set and his reactions are so unique that he could play up until he's 50 if he doesn't get hurt. Is it possible that he just goes to San Francisco next year and that we aren't even close to the end of Tom Brady?
So let me clarify, Yes, yes. I'll clarify what David Epstein's argument was, which I think is very reasonable, although it sounds like the opposite extreme version of the take that I was trying to bully Bill into giving, which is that the cliff is actually not a cliff at all. It's the opposite. Tom Brady's on a mountaintop that none of us can even see the scope of. But basically, it's the idea that Tom Brady, more than anyone else in sports history, has assembled like a catalog of quote unquote perceptual flashcards. He has seen every play, every iteration of the play, his processing speed, his ability to mentally cycle through plays pre-snap overcomes the deterioration of an arm that, incidentally, via the TB12 method, may be deteriorating less than we ever thought. So it's just the mental aspect of quarterbacking more than ever, especially with the rules in place to protect them. He is set up uniquely in this era to go and do things for longer than anyone ever has, is what David Epstein said.
I think that's fair, but I also think, not to reiterate sort of my point about the offensive line, protection will go a long way towards determining whether all of the, you know, specific tools that Brady has can even be used. Because even in recent years, as he's continued to play at a high level, when you look at his splits, when he's pressured versus non-pressured, they are dramatic. Fortunately for Tom Brady, he's played behind very good offensive lines. But if that's not the case, it's less to me like Brady will fall off a cliff and more he'll be pushed off a cliff by like Marcus Davenport.
I'm just picturing, by the way, Tom Brady in like the Johnny Knoxville old man makeup from Jackass, playing into his 70s. I think it's more likely that Tom Brady will decline enough that he will retire before he totally falls off the cliff. Like, I think Tom Brady could survive. I think Philip Rivers is a good example, right? Like, Philip Rivers was playing into his late 30s and was not great, doesn't have great arm strength by the end of his career, was not a guy who necessarily was running around. Like, if Philip Rivers got pressured, he'd just throw the ball into the ground and be like, screw this, we're moving on to the next play, I don't want to get hit. But he was still so smart before the snap that he worked and was an effective quarterback. I think Tom Brady could fall to that point, and then maybe, I think at that point, would retire. But it also is just the question of, what does Tom Brady want to accomplish? I mean, the argument was always, I want to play some 45, right? And Tom Brady, at this point, if he doesn't retire, is going to get to that point and probably be just fine as an NFL quarterback. So I think if he wants to stretch it to 50, we can see, and I think it's plausible. But I do think that at some point, he's going to lose enough arm strength that defenses are going to close in. It's going to reduce the offensive effectiveness. I think that that point is going to come. If it comes at 45, if it comes at 48, I can't say.
I love the idea that actually the way to understand this story is that Tom Brady has been cursed by a vengeful genie and he must play until he sucks and he will never suck. And he is just trapped here.
So basically like the plot of Speed where he has to keep going. The bus has to keep going.
Tom Brady.
Or the bomb will explode.
Yes, his QBR cannot dip beneath. Yeah, whatever it is. 50 miles an hour.
Tom Brady's going to undergo like a reverse combine where like every year Tom Brady has to throw the ball as far as possible. And if he can throw it 50 yards, he has to keep playing. But under 50 yards, he can finally retire. I mean, but he can't bring himself not throw the ball as far as possible.
I go back to that Mike Evans go ball. Like that was my final image of Tom Brady. And again, I think that's why he's still doing this. Because it's really hard to it's really hard to walk away from something when you're still really, really good at it. And I think he realized that, that would haunt him. And I don't blame him, honestly. Like, if I could play quarterback the way Tom Brady did in 2021, I would not retire either. Certainly not to hang out with kids.
As someone with a kid, I completely co-sign that sentiment. But there are a couple of people who were very wrong about Tom Brady that I want to get to. The first one, just for the full cinematic universe of our debatable film here starring Tom Brady. Where was Bill Belichick when he heard the news? What was he doing?
Ooh, God.
Just like peering through binoculars somewhere, just like, what's he doing?
What is the, isn't it like a special phone the government has in the case of nuclear war? I feel like that phone exists in the Patriots building, and it's just for Tom Brady news. And wherever Bill Belichick is in the building, that phone rings, and he knows he has to answer it at all times.
Well, we know now what style of texter Bill Belichick is, thanks to Brian Flores. So I have to imagine, you know, the text blew up, and he probably didn't take it super well.
Big periods at the end of sentences energy from the greatest coach we've ever seen. But the second person, Alabaster, is just on the card that you just put down, then took away. Because this is just amazing, right? Like, less than 24 hours before Tom Brady unretired, this poor sap paid $518,000 for the last.
Not poor. Not poor.
Fair.
Sap. Poor now. Not poor.
This very liquid sap paid $518,000 to get this thing, which I just, you feel like they're, I don't know, like Tom Brady needs to, I don't know, make this right via some commercial venture. I don't know. Just, this is pathetic.
That's
this feels
word.
Like the unreleased lyric of Alanis Morissette's Ironic, like, you know, pay $518,000 for a touchdown ball, only to realize it's worth nothing at all.
Well, that's good.
Isn't it ironic?
That was pretty impressive.
That was really good. I don't know if we can top that dismount, Alabaster.
That's why they pay me the big bucks.
That was good. That was real good. All right, we're going to move on. We got one quote for you guys. We're going to do a single round of Who Done It, the game where we give you a quote. You tell us who done it.
Oh.
No. What? This was last week. This was last week. I didn't come back to talk about this story. I timed my return.
For the podcast audience, yes, the silhouette for whodunit is now Broncos quarterback Russell Wilson.
Ooh, it hasn't even played yet. A Photoshop making its way into whodunit.
That's one of the best Photoshops we've seen so far, in fairness, to Alabaster.
He just looks great in that orange. All right, yeah, first quote.
Looks happy.
There's unvaxxed people in this building already. Early on in the season, people didn't understand what was going on. Now it just looks stupid. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, Eric, you got to figure this out. And your choices are Charles Barkley, LeBron, Kevin Durant, or Steve Nash.
We all know the answer to this, right? We don't have to beat around this bush. Right?
I love beating around a good bush. I have to admit. I'm willing to at least entertain the notion for 30 seconds. Mina, don't.
On the clippable.
I didn't say anything. I did not say anything.
We're going to want to clip Mina's ironic parody and also what Bill just said for social reasons.
Okay.
Later.
Yes. Yeah. All right. So actually, I mean, LeBron did express a similar sentiment on Twitter.
Right.
This quote is, of course, from Kevin Durant. And I've actually been trying to kind of process how I feel about this whole thing, the Kafka-esque scenario in which Kyrie Irving now exists, where he can attend Nets games as a fan, but not playing them. And I have mixed feelings about it. Like, on one hand, I'm not sympathetic to him, given that the solution to this is extraordinarily simple and one that billions of people around the world have undertaken. It's a life-saving thing. It's free. It's called the vaccine.
Yes.
On the other hand, I actually think snafu, what do you call this? The quagmire that the Nets have found in themselves in this kind of fight now with Eric Adams, is counterproductive to the end goal, which is encouraging more people to get vaccinated. I realize that sounds crazy, but here's the thing. The reason they're sticking with it is they don't want to look like there's a double standard, right? Oh, all these private employees got fired maybe for not getting vaccinated. Now Kyrie Irving is getting away with it. I understand the concern about those optics. However, I think this is such a weird and bad look, what I just described, that it actually disincentivizes people from, I wouldn't say getting vaccinated, but feeling like the government policies make sense.
Yeah, it erodes trust in institutions. None of this visually or logically is adding up at this point. And yes, the context, bigger picture here is that coronavirus numbers, thank God, are trending down. So New York City has otherwise relaxed all of these protocols, which is amazing. Like, so many people helped make that happen. Kyrie Irving is not one of them. And that is part of the problem. But this is a story that would be, like, objectively hilarious if it wasn't just dystopian. Like, I love the idea of Kevin Durant and Eric Adams in a war of words with each other. Eric Adams is a ridiculous person. He's his own rabbit hole. Go Google veganism and whether he lives in New York. All of the stuff that makes a crazy New York mayor crazy, he is. Kevin Durant going at Eric, going real first name basis with your parents on this, is an amazing move. Mm-hmm. But... it is, for the reasons Mina alluded to, Bill, it feels counterproductive because you can't be the privileged multimillionaire athlete calling for special treatment when others have not received that as well. And that to me is why this mm-hmm. feels like an amazing bit of content and a terrible strategy.
Yes. It feels like there's no winners here, which I think is the frustrating part. Like, I think looking for the, okay, what can happen to have this make sense? It feels like someone who is incredibly entrenched on either side of this debate has to give up. And I don't know about you guys. I've had to defend a lot of indefensible opinions that I've held onto and just been stuck with and had to go like dig deeper to try and make sense of. And
yeah, the Tom Brady Cliff one from the A block was rough.
The Tom Brady Cliff one from the A block. The Drew Brees
we
Cliff one.
We chopped that up, so yeah.
Yep.
It's so, aggregated. Yeah, Bill Barnwell. Tom Brady's flying up a cliff this year.
It's good.
Just
it's
a little
good.
Request for the editors.
Yeah. You know, I feel like that's not going to happen at this point. Like, if it was going to happen, it would have happened by now. So, yes, this universe where somehow Kyrie can literally sit courtside, where players playing the Nets from outside of Brooklyn can play unvaccinated, but Kyrie cannot, is stupid, but also not stupid at the same time somehow.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I think kind of everything about this now is stupid, is where I'm landing. Like, the decision is bad, the optics of this are bad, and I think all of it together isn't helpful to anyone at mm-hmm. this point. I also think we should address the fact that Kevin Durant had a monster game yesterday and had maybe one of my favorite memeable moments of the year, telling Evan Fournier that he was too small and then doing the hand gesture, which is just far exceeds this quote about Eric Adams.
Yeah, I mean, KD, sure. 53-9-6 against the Knicks in a close game that he ultimately just took over. And I guess where I land, because the Nets are this type of a team, a still somehow plausible championship contender, if not favorite, how they are this and why that's all at risk in a play-in round, that's where I can't get on the Kyrie Irving was right all along bandwagon.
Right.
Because if you actually play this out logically, they're not the 8th seed if Kyrie Irving can play in home games when it was reasonable for this mandate and this protocol to exist. And so where are
especially
we?
Especially since it's plausible that the play-in will be against Toronto, where we know he cannot play.
Yes, Canada.
Again, very, very simple solution to all of this, man. Very simple solution.
I think Kyrie should escalate things, to be honest with you. I think he should start not just buying a courtside seat, but buy the entire courtside. Buy an entire section of seats and just have Kyrie sitting in the middle of the section, eating popcorn by himself. Like,
he is lying
to the
down.
Point where it is, yeah, like you know how like Kanye West was like living in the Falcon Stadium for a couple of weeks. Like, Kyrie should just start living in the stadium or living in the Barclays Center arena. Uh-oh.
Just breathing on people, just
producer
spraying.
This is legal, he yelled, breathing on me.
Bring Joe Rogan. Yeah, what's up, Charlie?
I think that the funniest outcome that we can all root for is that when unvaxxed Kyrie Irving is allowed to play, when they change the mandate to allow him to play, he then gets vaccinated to be a contrarian of being.
Love that. Hard agree.
Yes, 100%. Kyrie gets vaccinated at center court before the next game.
Oh, man.
All right. We're going to close out the show with a couple. What are the chances? The first one. We're actually going to talk about the NCAA tournament that we skipped over for the first 30 minutes of the show. And the question is, Gonzaga has Chet Holmgren and Drew Timmy and Nembhard. And our question is, what are the chances that this is finally number one overall seed again, Gonzaga's year?
So I guess the question we must ask ourselves is, are we at a point where like the current generation of young people knows Gonzaga as good? Because that is sort of the branding concern here. They've just been so good at this point for long enough to where, yes, they are like, per Vegas, the favorites to win this, and it's not particularly close. They are plus 300, I think, at last check, which means they have like a 25% chance, Bill, if I get my Vegas math right, to win the whole thing. That's like the proper answer here. So yeah, a 1 in 4 chance, because that is how good Gonzaga is. I just think that we're kind of lagging. There is a lag in terms of brand awareness to get to that point.
Yeah, speaking of Kyrie, I think Gonzaga very much wants to transition from being the school that John Stockton went to the school that just won an NCAA championship. I think that would be really exciting for Gonzaga to pull off. And I think if it's ever going to happen, this is the year. I mean, by 538's numbers, Gonzaga, I think, is 27% to win the championship. Nobody else. Arizona second at 10%. By Ken Pomeroy's numbers, Gonzaga is not only the best school in the country, but Arizona in second place is closer to 14th than they are to first place Gonzaga. Gonzaga is one of the least lucky schools in the entire country so far. This seems they're going to be even better than they've looked so far during their regular season. So I think if it's ever going to happen, this has to be the year, which means like 2%, because that is usually a disaster for teams when it's like the one chance they have, like the golden 2%. Generation. No golden generation ever pulls things off and wins things. I'm going to say 2%.
Damn.
Write that down so that, and then cut it up with the Tom Brady is falling off a cliff take.
A spicy 10%. Deuce. A spicy deuce.
Yeah, Bill said two. Charlie, Bill said two.
Parlay it. Parlay it with the Tom Brady falling off a cliff.
I'm going to price this right, Pablo, and say 26%. Please write that in.
Wow.
Look, I don't have a horse in this race, although my alma mater, unlike Pablo's, did make it to the tournament, which was exciting.
But we just got that drop.
If I did, would be wanting to see Gonzaga play as long as possible, because I just cannot look away from Chet Holmgren playing.
Okay, so Chet Holmgren, I mean, Mina, yeah, as somebody who
tell people who haven't been paying attention to college basketball who he is and what he's
yeah, I mean, it makes sense that, again, I can't say simp because of cancel culture, but to be a stan of Chet Holmgren makes total sense if you're a stan of Kevin Durant, because he is white Kevin Durant. Yes. Is the very basic elevator pitch on his movie character. He is the thinnest, highest shouldered 7-footer that you've ever seen, who happens to be white and also happens to shoot a three with startling accuracy. And yeah, it's 14, 10, and 4, 4 being blocks per game. He is like the number one pick in the country in terms of NBA prospects. So yes, more Chet Holmgren means more good television in March.
I have a question for you guys.
He needs a nickname, A. But B, yeah, Bill.
Well, because Kevin Durant rejected the best nickname of all time, Slim Reaper. Which is available.
He's warming to it. Yeah.
He could also do Slim Shady, the Slimmer Reaper, because he's even thinner than Kevin Durant.
Price is writing the nickname. Wow.
Yes.
I'm just trying to slightly
Slimmer Reaper, Chet Holmgren.
Dude, I've just never seen anything like it. A guy built that way who shoots like that, and somehow is good at defense.
Yes.
Despite the size. He is a very good defender.
Yes, he is. It's incredible. A trash talker. He is super, super physical. He will bang on you, and he seems to weigh as much as me, which is all very disturbing.
So when I talk about beating around the bush, that's a problem. But when Pablo can say he's banging on you, that's suddenly not a problem. this double standard on debate is ridiculous. My question for you guys.
Could have said rim, I didn't. So good at this.
Has Chet Hanks permanently changed our perception of
Chet Hanks?
Chet Hanks. So Chet, definitely the name Chet took a beating.
A big one.
Recently. So this is big. For all the Chets out there, if Chet Holmgren can bring it back and rescue the name from the clutches of Chet Hanks.
We have a nickname though. We have a nickname. It is March. It is spring. Welcome, America, to White Boy Spring.
That's it. It's done. The segment's
oh,
done.
No.
Oh, no.
We got signing or what?
Got some breaking news on the football front.
I hate when
the Pittsburgh Steelers have signed Mitch Trubisky to a two-year deal. Is he possibly their answer at quarterback?
Let's go, baby!
Okay, the smoke around this for a while was that he was going to the Giants, so I'd like to
Bill
hear
Barnwell's Luke
Barnwell,
Giants
fan, his reaction to this news.
Boy. It's just like a weight has been lifted off my shoulders, guys. I feel so free! This is how scared I was of the Mitch Trubisky era. Daniel Jones is the quarterback for my favorite team. And I'm like, I can deal with that. That's fine. I can envision the future with Daniel Jones. I just like, they had Mason Rudolph. Did they want a quarterback who was like more Mason Rudolph-y than Mason Rudolph and had to get Mitch Trubisky? Like, what happened here to lead the Steelers to do this?
Here's what happened. Mitch Trubisky didn't play and his value went up, which should be a lesson to all of us, by the way. Just sit out a few rounds and people will miss you. I mean, I was at the combine and it was fascinating watching the Mitch Trubisky hype slowly grow as the week went by. It was like watching a sleeper cell get activated in real time. And what's fascinating about Mitch, and I think this is where the Daniel Jones thing, there's like an interesting parallel. We've seen a lot of Mitch Trubisky playing football. We've seen Daniel Jones playing football, but in, I would say, more adverse conditions. But there's still some questions about, like, you know, what can he improve with a better coach, size, coordinator, whatever, offensive line. I don't understand why people feel like we still don't know who Mitch Trubisky is as a quarterback. Maybe I'm wrong. I could be wrong. This could be my Tom Brady cliff of the show. But I feel like I've seen a lot of this guy playing. And, you know, we're talking about someone who, since he was drafted in 2017, I believe ranks in the 40s in off-target percentage, in passer rating. I mean, yards per attempt. So, like, it's just not been good.
But what is, like, the sleeper cell and the organization of a message? What is the sales pitch on Mitch Trubisky? Because I truly don't understand it. I get that doing nothing is better than being terrible, but I don't get the affirmative reason for why, like, this is a thing that a team actually will put money into for a 2-year contract.
Okay, let me get into the mind of Mitch Trubisky's agent. Let me just imagine the scenario where I'm going to sell Mitch Trubisky to you guys. Okay. He's tall, he's white, two important characteristics if you want to get a second opportunity as an NFL quarterback. Decent athlete, decent arm, and somehow he was held back by the Chicago Bears instead of the Chicago Bears and their dominant defense being held back by Mitch Trubisky. Like, the best thing that happened to Mitch Trubisky, number one, was missing a year, and number two was having the double doink happen, because I think there was this perception that, oh, if the Bears just won that game, the entire universe changes, when Mitch Trubisky was terrible for the first three quarters of that game, had like multiple dropped interceptions, was an absolute mess, and got lucky to even have a chance of winning that game. Mina, please.
I'll throw in two more things. I think people watch Justin Fields struggle behind a papier-mâché offensive line throwing to, like, Darnell Mooney and said, see, that's Mitch Trubisky. They struggled too, and it's Bears' fault, even though the situation had changed. And then the other thing, and I think this is important, Bill, in addition to the physical characteristics you described, is where Mitch Trubisky was drafted. I mean, we have seen time and time again in this league, if you are a first-round pick or, like, Mitch Trubisky taken at the very top or near the top of the first round, people don't forget that. It follows you for the rest of your career. You will be overvalued in the same way. If you're drafted later, you will be undervalued. And I can tell you this, if Mitch Trubisky was a third round pick, this would not be happening.
Mina?
Can
I ask you a question?
Yes.
Would you rather have Mitch Trubisky or Drew Lock as your quarterback in 2020?
All right, I'm good. Good show, guys.
Oh, Lord.
Mina has left the broadcast.
Mina specifically did not do any of the shows that we did because we might have done this to her. And then we did this to her, which, you know, feels like she should have expected it, to be honest.
I didn't trade Russell Wilson, guys. It's not my fault. Pablo didn't trade Russell Wilson.
Nope. I have very liberal who can cook in my kitchen policy.
Yes.
Mina hanging upside down like 50 Cent and flipping us the bird is the right way to end today's episode of Debatable.
The best time. And you know what? If Mina doesn't come back, she's fallen off her debatable cliff. That's her problem.
Wow. Alabaster.
That was fun.
Yeah, I liked today's episode.
Yeah,
I love the breaking news graphic.
I thought we were going to get the peeing dog in, but Mitch Trubisky was our metaphorical peeing dog.
Ooh.